For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. Current evidence shows that there are about 30,000 early medical abortions a year in Australia. About 8% of those, or around 2,500, are likely to be repeat abortions. Research published in the MJA this week shows that only one in four women prescribed an early medical abortion are then prescribed hormonal contraceptive products, the most effective way of preventing a repeat unintended pregnancy. The question is, why is that number so low?
It's highlighting, particularly to GPs, but all providers of early medical abortion, the impacts of contraception care on outcomes like rapid repeat unintended pregnancy. So there's a clear burden here that could be prevented with conversations.
That was Associate Professor Luke Grzeszkowiak, a clinical pharmacist and practitioner fellow at Flinders University and the South Australian Health and Medical Research Institute. The research he and his colleagues conducted looked at data from 11,000 women prescribed early medical abortion from 2013 to 2020. Their primary outcome was to measure hormonal contraception dispensed within 60 days of early medical abortion. Their secondary outcome was to assess the relationship between contraception type and the likelihood of another early medical abortion within 2 years. Luke is with me today to talk about their results and their implications. So you and your colleagues have written a research letter for the MJA talking about LARC use after medical abortion. Is there a gap in the knowledge here? Why did you decide to do this research particularly?
So we know that post-abortion contraception care is a really important provision of abortion care services as a whole. And we know that ovulation can occur as soon as 8 days after an abortion, and that 50% of women report resuming sexual activity within 2 weeks. So there's a risk there in terms of a rapid repeat pregnancy if contraception care is not appropriately addressed and discussed at that point. So we've got evidence from clinical trials and other cohort studies showing that the provision of contraception care significantly reduces the risk of rapid repeat pregnancies and particularly the risk of repeat medical abortions. But what I guess has been really lacking is real world data. So we know from clinical trials, they're often a different population than real world practice. So we've got to see, there's always a need to sort of see the uptake of that evidence into practice, but also we don't have any recent data from an Australian perspective. So we can look at studies from overseas, but of course they're not going to be generalizable to an Australian setting. So we really need to assess this to see whether there is an evidence gap from an Australian perspective here.
So what data did you look at?
We analysed data from the nationally representative pharmaceutical benefit scheme 10% sample, and we took a cohort of women aged 15 to 49 years who were dispensed mifepristone, which is only on the PBS for early medical abortion. We looked across the study period of 2013 to 2020, and specifically looking then at the use of ongoing hormonal contraceptive methods within the 60 days after the dispensing date of early medical abortion.
And what were your big findings, Luke?
So we had a cohort overall of just over 11,000 women who had undergone an early medical abortion. And of those, about 13% were provided hormonal long-acting reversible contraception in the 60 days after that. And a sort of a similar number, 12.5%, were provided other forms of hormonal contraception, which included the depot injection, the combined hormonal contraceptive pill, and the progestin-only pill. So if we take that together, essentially we came with one in four being provided ongoing hormonal contraception. And of course, that's what's supplied through pharmaceutical benefit scheme. Yeah. So we are going to underestimate it because we're not picking up copper in uterine devices. And we know that there's a number of oral contraceptive agents that aren't covered on the PBS. So we are slightly underestimating it. We've got pretty good coverage with the long-acting reversible contraception and overall about one in four.
Did that number surprise you?
It did surprise me, particularly when you compare it to international research that's been done. So it's been one Australian study a while back now from women who underwent a medical abortion at a particular clinic. Yeah. And they followed a large number of them over time to look at post-abortion contraception care. And they found rates of 25% of long-acting reversible contraception, so more than double. And there's studies from Sweden and the United States and even the UK, which are showing rates of long-acting reverse contraception use of upwards of 30%. And there's a recent study from New Zealand which showed that following an intervention to promote long-acting reversible contraception, they were able to get it as high as 50 to 60% of those undergoing a medical abortion going then on to this method of contraception. So when you put that in context of ours of looking at 12%, we know that that's well off the mark in terms of what the international evidence is telling us. And so it definitely highlights to us that there's a potentially a gap here in terms of clinical practice.
Do we know how many of those women in that sample who didn't get LARCs, do we know how many of them went on to have a repeat abortion?
That was the second thing that we looked at as part of this, again, using the dispensing data to identify those that underwent a repeat early medical abortion. Now, of course, we don't have information on those that might have undergone a surgical termination as a subsequent. And so we're going to be underestimating the total proportion. But among that cohort of women that we identified, it was about 8% that went on to have another early medical abortion within the 2 years of that index medical abortion. So that's quite a substantial number, but that does fit with the international evidence as well. Right. So there's a number of studies looking at this, and it is a higher risk population that does have a higher rate of repeat unintended pregnancy. So if anything, we'd probably expect that to be slightly larger if we had data on surgical terminations well.
I'm chatting today with Associate Professor Luke Grzkowiak from Flinders University and the South Australian Health and Medical Research Institute. His co-authored research letter is available at mja.com.au, where it is free to access. The full web address for the paper is in the show notes for this podcast. The next issue of the MJA will be published online at mja.com.au on the 18th of April. It is a themed issue focused on respiratory medicine. Topics include asthma and the conditions that mimic it, lung cancer, COVID-19, cessation support for smokers going into elective surgery, and more. You can subscribe to our podcasts for free by visiting Spotify, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and Amazon Music, searching for the Medical Journal of Australia and hitting the big subscribe button. Back to our chat. That's a lot of preventable abortions.
Yes, and of course, got to remember this is a 10% sample. Yeah. So if we extrapolate this out, so our current evidence is showing that there's about 30,000 early medical abortions a year in Australia where mifepristone is being used. So if we look at, 8% of that, 2,500 medical abortions would be repeat medical abortions. And so that's a substantial number that definitely there's the potential to prevent some of those through improvements in contraception care. Telehealth services is certainly one that is quite interesting. So they'll post the medications out and then they'll do all of the interactions, remotely. But what they can't do remotely is support provision of long-acting reversible contraception. So when we're talking about that population, and yes, telehealth is fantastic for improving accessibility of early medical abortion services, there really needs to be an emphasis on continuity of care in some sense and referral to a local LARC provider. That potentially is one area where there might be a bit of a gap because those people providing the telehealth services can't do anything but recommend or refer for some of these other contraceptive methods. So I feel like every practitioner is probably going to be different in how they provide or structure their services. Early medical abortion does require a number of visits, so there's different points at which contraception can be discussed. It'd be great to see it discussed right up front, but there's a lot of other stuff to go through, and I feel like in talking to some colleagues, they want to avoid any sense of judgment that might come with talking about contraception at the time of talking about providing an abortion. And, it was interesting looking even in our cohort that I think it's about 10% had a recent dispensing of contraception prior to the early medical abortion, suggesting that potentially ineffective use of that may have, may be present. So there may be opportunities to identify and improve or enhance the contraceptive care as well to prevent medical abortions from that perspective.
Is there an opportunity perhaps for co-dispensing?
Yeah, definitely. We've got pretty good data in terms of what evidence there is around sort of co-prescribing. So with the exception of the intrauterine device, all of the other contraceptive methods can be initiated at or around the time of an early medical abortion. So if we take the implant as an example, that can be provided at the time that the mifepristone is taken. So right at that time of that first sort of consultation. The injection's a bit more complicated. There's some suggestions it could reduce the efficacy. So preference is talk that through with individuals that if you start using this right now, it might reduce the effectiveness of the mifepristone. So might be better off waiting. But we've also got trial evidence of delayed versus immediate provision, which shows that by even delaying it by 6 weeks, you increase the risk of unintended pregnancy. Intrauterine device can be used, of course, after products of conception have been confirmed to have been expelled. And then you've got things like combined hormonal contraceptive, which could be taken after the subsequent dose of the misoprostol, a couple of days after the mifepristone.
Yes.
But certainly that could be provided. So the script's there with the instructions that when you're taking misoprostol, you could take these other contraceptive methods. So we're really interested in sort of drilling down into this a bit further, just in terms of utilizing GP data to understand how the visits are sort of structured, who's returning for visits, what contraceptive care is actually, what contraception is dispensed at the time of the consultation versus 2 weeks later or subsequently. So actually looking at timings of when these conversations happen, as opposed to what's necessarily dispensed.
A lot of our listeners are GPs, Luke. Is there a message for them in this? Is there a need for longer, more in-depth consultations about medical abortion and LARC?
Ideally, if you're having a visit that's related to early medical abortion and you're trying to squeeze all these things in on top of that, I can see that it's going to be a difficult thing to do. So if there's the opportunity to make sure that there's appropriate reimbursement and funding for provision of contraception care, then I think that would be incredibly important in terms of supporting it. Taking a step back, it's highlighting to particularly to GPs, but all early providers of early medical abortion, the impacts of contraception care on outcomes like rapid repeat unintended pregnancy. So there's a clear burden here that could be prevented with conversations. So it's working out how do we structure this into the overall provision. The other issue that does come up is this potential mismatch between people who may provide early medical abortion but might not actually be providers of long-acting reversible contraception. It's making sure that there's opportunities and supports to enable anyone who wants to be trained up to be able to provide or insert implants and intrauterine devices so that when these are requested, they can be recommended, A, as an effective method by the person who's providing early medical abortion, but then they can follow through in terms of prescribing and the insertion of that. So, you know, we don't know, and it's something we are going to look at, whether an individual's experience of providing LARC actually influences contraceptive care in an abortion setting, if that's a potential barrier to use. When we look at factors that are associated with LARC use, we see that it's more common in the younger age group, so 15 to 24 compared to the sort of the older group. Those with a concession card status were more likely to end up receiving long-acting reversible contraception. So, you know, that's positive, and certainly obviously there's subsidies for those with a concession card. You know, they're excellent methods for a relatively low amount of money. And also those that had a history of LARC use were more likely to, they maybe used one 4 or 5 years ago, and we could see that in the data. We're more likely to then go on to that method, I guess, that familiarity. So part of the whole conversation, I think, is raising awareness. And we can't necessarily assume that people who we're talking to, that the patients have a good understanding of all their contraceptive options. So we've got to talk through what the different options are, and there's lots of programs to try and improve awareness, both amongst clinicians, but also amongst patients, so that they can make informed decisions around what's going to suit their circumstances the best.
Thanks, Luke.
Yeah, I'll be fantastic. Good.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.